Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hello and welcome to the Media Podcast. I'm Matt Deegan. On the show today, it's awards fever as we look at who's in the running for the BAFTA TV Awards, as well as all the winners at the ARIAs too. Also on the programme, Sky Sports crossed the Rubicon and broadcast 3pm matches. Disney Plus look to do fewer things better. So where are they putting all the Marvel money? All that plus we talk Eurovision controversy, why publishers are not fans of Google right now, and in the media quiz we play, does it float? That's all coming up in this edition of the Media Podcast. In the news this week, Piers Morgan bagged an exclusive with the woman at the centre of the baby reindeer controversy. Comedy producer Fiona Harvey spoke to Piers Morgan on Thursday. Channel 4 continues to pause production on some of its big performers. Last week, they confirmed no new episodes of 24 Hours in A&E will be filmed this autumn. And the same now goes for 8 out of 10 Cats Does Countdown. And the BAFTA TV Awards take place this weekend, with Channel 4's expose of Russell Brand in contention in the current affairs category. Meanwhile, the under fire comedian was baptized this week by Bear Grylls. So that's all right then. Well, with me here in the London podcast studios, it's awards fever as we welcome broadcaster Alex Zane and down the line, media writer Caroline Frost. Hello, Alex.
Hello, Matt.
You popped up on our feed last week with your countdown to the BAFTAs podcast. You've been recording lots of them. What have you learnt along the way, Jerry Springer style?
Oh, it's been a roller coaster, Matt. Highs and lows. No, it's been very enjoyable. I thank you for lending me your producer, the wonderful Matt Hill, for that podcast, Countdown to the BAFTAs. Yeah, it's been great. It's actually nice to be able to be on your podcast and actually offer some predictions, because the one thing, obviously, making the official BAFTA podcast, you have to maintain parity. There can be no undue preference for any of them. But now I'm here.
You're free.
Free to tell you who I think is going to win some of the bigger categories.
Have you watched lots of the entries, most of the entries, some of the entries?
I'm looking forward. This is, if the child me could hear me say this now, I'm looking forward to not watching TV for a bit. I have seen an awful lot. I did my due diligence. That's I don't know whether you find this, but even if it wasn't relevant that I watch a show, I feel like a fraud. If you start talking about something or even nod along to someone else who's commenting on Happy Valley, for example, and you're like, but you haven't seen it, it doesn't work for me. So yes, I watched a lot. Especially Happy Valley, of course.
And I suppose watch things which you maybe wouldn't normally have watched.
Indeed. Squid Game, the challenge, wasn't on my radar. But I will say that I'd intended to watch one episode of everything to manage to get through the vast number of nominees. Occasionally, and unsurprisingly, with them being BAFTA nominated, some of these shows are very good. And so therefore, I ended up watching 10 hours of Squid Game The Challenge when I should have been perhaps using my time more responsibly.
Well, Caroline, this is for last year's telly mainly, isn't it? So big names, things like Happy Valley, as we mentioned, Succession, The Bear. What stood out for you in that list?
Yes. What I find interesting is how many of these series we're farewelling them. So, for example, you mentioned Happy Valley. There's also Succession. There's also The Crown. I think one of the most possibly competitive categories is leading actor. And it just shows, it's a testament to the quality that we have on offer in the last 12 months of TV. So in that actor category, we've got Brian Cox for Succession, Dominic West for The Crown. We also have Steve Coogan for The Reckoning, which is perhaps a little bit controversial because obviously it was a spellbinding performance about an awful person in the form of Jimmy Savile. And of course, we have to mention as well, Timothy Spall, The Sixth Commandment. So how you put a cigarette paper between any of those four. And I haven't mentioned Kane Robinson of Top Boy, which is also finishing, and Papa Essiadu, who was marvellous in The Lazarus Project. So that's just one category. I'm glad there are lots more, but it just, I think it's just a testament to the quality. I think the days of TV being film and cinema's poor relation are so long ago now that that they're just, I think it'd be very interesting to see who goes home with the gongs on Sunday evening.
And yet there is a word that is mentioned, I think, during awards season more than any other time of the year. And it's a word people love at this time of year: snub. What? Who was snubbed? What was snubbed? And I would argue, I do think they missed a trick by not nominating James Norton for Happy Valley. It's, you know, it's not a glaring omission because, as you just said, Caroline, it's a tremendous list. But really, his performance is equal, in my opinion, to that of Sarah Lancashire's in that series. And I think it's sad that he hasn't been nominated.
Well, so yeah. Anybody can win these awards. In the Craft Awards, Charlie Brooker and Bisha Ali, they won. They beat Jesse Armstrong and Sally Wainwright. So anything can happen.
Mm. And I don't want to be, certainly don't want to be down on some of these nominations. But I do think it is surprising because I'm a huge Charlie Brooker fan. And yes, congratulations to him and Bisha Kaeli at the Craft Awards. But Demon 79 as a nomination here, and equal in nominations to Happy Valley. They both have seven nominations. I've yet to meet someone for whom that is their favourite episode of season six of Black Mirror. It's a great episode because, in my opinion, none of them aren't great. But this, to be the one that has been selected and put forward and to have this many nominations, is a little bit of a surprise.
Well, we will see. I suppose I've heard that the Royals are not attending the BAFTAs this year. Does that mean the Crown's got a much better chance, Caroline?
I think Dominic West was very good. So who are we trying to... It's the Elizabeth Debicki era, isn't it? I've actually lost track with all the various incarnations. She was Knockout as Princess Diana, but... The Royals and the Crown. Well, there is an argument that the Royals need the Crown. I think that people have written about this at length, discuss. Obviously, they don't like it when it doesn't reflect well on them. But the only thing worse than that is to be completely ignored. I don't think it will make that much difference. It does mean that Prince William won't have to perfect his sort of rigor mortis, polite smile, polite little clap for whatever goes on. It does give a little bit of freedom to the nominees.
I thought that was the most Princess Anne moment. Did you see this last week? She was somebody asked her about the Crown, and she made some reference to, apparently it took them 30 minutes to do my hair, the person playing me. Only takes me 5 minutes in the morning, which I thought was so Princess
Anne.
Very,
very Princess Anne, yes. I think if anybody warrants a spin-off, I think Anne is surely a contender. I think she's probably the one we know least about, which means that the writers have got possibly the most fun to play with.
From that list of supporting actresses, though, and going back to the Crown, I think Leslie Manville, she's my money. On the night, I think Leslie Manville for her portrayal of Princess Margaret.
Okay, get on to Paddy Power, you've heard it here. right, Disney CEO Bob Iger has indicated he's to concentrate on quality, not quantity, going forward after a poor form at the box office and on its streamer Disney+. Alex, what's he been saying?
Yeah, interesting that he top-loaded it with Marvel. He was talking a lot about Marvel and how they're going to ideally release two Marvel movies a year and two TV shows. And I think this is going to be music to a lot of cinema fans and Marvel fans, not to exhibitors, unfortunately, who are going to be chomping at the bit for movies to fill the gap left by Disney. But certainly it's a good decision. I mean, look, we went on a journey with the Avengers movies, with the first 10 plus years of Marvel, and after Endgame, you know, which for a time was the highest grossing movie in the world, you need to hit the ground running. We've ended a chapter of Marvel's history. You need to hit the ground running, and they failed to do that. Now, not pointing any fingers, there were some interesting ideas. Getting Chloe Zhao to direct Eternals was interesting on paper. Did it work? No, it didn't work. And the box office reflected that. So I do think we're at a period now where they do need to reframe the Marvel universe.
Are you saying that they don't need any more Ant-Man?
Again, I mean, that's a perfect example of exactly what I'm talking about. Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania, not a good film. I mean, the pressure on the shoulders of Deadpool 3, which is due out in just over a month, Deadpool and Wolverine, is immense because you can't move for articles going, this film has to save the MCU, because that's how bad it's got. I do think there's a bigger problem here, which is that while it's great that they want to increase quality over quantity, we're still looking at movies that cost in excess of $200 million to produce. Now, he did say in the same speech, we're going to be working on some more original ideas as well, which is great. But Steven Spielberg, about 5 years ago, he claimed this was going to happen, and it has happened, that we have either end of a spectrum now. You have $200 million plus movies that cannot fail, otherwise we're in this situation that Bob Iger's referencing, and then you have much smaller budgeted movies, $10 million or less, because, you know, it's a risk.
So we've lost this kind of middle market movie, this sort of $30, $40 million film just doesn't really exist anymore.
Exactly, which I grew up with. I mean, I was interviewing Matt Damon recently, and he was like, the movies that made me, the Bourne movies, $60 million budgeted movies. Granted, it's an adaptation, but still, an original-ish idea for cinema, they just simply don't exist. And that's where I think we need to start focusing. Budgets and studios need to start making those movies again.
Because some of the streamers have leaned into a bit of that, or that they've started kind of commissioning those, or a lot of those traditional actors. A lot of kind of Sony movies of the past were quite those sort of 30, 40 million ones. I mean, does this say, Caroline, something more about Disney Plus and the other streamers having to think about how they spend their money?
Well, I think that Disney have found another way of slicing the apple. So if you think about what we've had in terms of offerings recently, the likes of the Beatles documentary, we've had the Bon Jovi documentary last year, Taylor Swift, that record-breaking, that phenomenon that is coming our way this summer to London, the Eras Tour, that went to Disney. These are not traditional Marvel, Star Wars, all the kind of the animations with which it has been long associated. It's trying something completely different with, of course, those big, deep pockets, and succeeding. And I think that that's probably as much as the failure of, well, comparative, let's not put out the violins just yet, but the relative, let's say, slightly flatlining of those titles. They have also, that's coincided with successful ventures in the documentary field and other fields. So it's just given them food for thought. I mean, it's a delight to me as a viewer, because I have to say those Marvel universes and their ilk leave me cold, but I've got plenty to enjoy as a viewer on the Disney platform these days. Very happy with them.
You are undergoing what Bob Iger calls superhero fatigue, Caroline. Or perhaps you were just never into superhero movies to begin with. But I do think that's not a statement. It's been thrown around so much. Superhero fatigue. Like, we're bored of superhero movies. It's been too many. I honestly don't think that's the case. I think it's bad movie fatigue. I think if you make these movies and you make them well, people will go and see them. There's been examples like Guardians of the Galaxy. Yeah. The final part of that did well next to Ant-Man and the Wasp: Quantumania, which did not do well.
And the first movie in that series brought a lot of new people into the MCU, so they can do it. I thought it was interesting, Bluey accounts for about a third of Disney Plus's TV consumption. And obviously they're a big co-funder of the new Doctor Who. That's brought kind of more money in. Are they trying to just maybe put their small amounts of money in more places to maybe see what can be a winner?
You'd hope so. And I think another key thing, especially just to go back to Marvel, which is Bob Iger himself was using as an example, I think it was a huge mistake to demand that viewers of the MCU, the cinematic universe, to actually continue to follow it. You had to watch the Marvel TV series on Disney Plus, which I'm sure on paper to someone, they were like, well, great, we're going to bring all these viewers into Disney Plus. A lot of people didn't do that because a lot of people can't commit to 10 hours of TV just to understand why suddenly Scarlet Witch is evil in the Doctor Strange sequel.
Well, I look forward to the spin-off podcast where you can explain all elements of the MCU.
Sorry, I went deep there.
Right, over to Sky now. And Sky Sports have announced they're going to increase the amount of football shown this autumn by half, including showing 3 p.m. kickoffs for the first time. Caroline, 3 p.m. has always been sort of sacrosanct, but no more.
No, bit of a sea change. I mean, obviously the purists will kick off and wave their scarves. What I find so fascinating is how, now I walk here with care onto the pitch because I am not a football expert, but I am aware of is it Manchester City's domination? I hear tell of somebody called Erling Haaland and co. And in the light of that, similar to, I guess, Max Verstappen's dominance of Formula One up to last weekend, it can make it all a bit snoresville. Meanwhile, it's all going on in these lower leagues. And I know anecdotally from my friendship groups, the amount of passion and interest and involvement and subscription. My friend will not leave the house if there is a Bristol Rovers match. Now, he is obviously a sitting duck for this kind of viewer. And if he has ever been even minded to subscribe to Sky Sports, it would be now with news like this. So I think it, much as it may not involve all of the nation, myself included, I am aware of a very passionate, very invested congregation that this will be honey and music to their ears.
I mean, Alex, they've just signed a deal with the EPL and a lot of opportunities to put a lot of games on. What are they proposing?
Yeah, no, it's interesting. And as I mistakenly said earlier, Sky have just signed a deal with the EDL, which would be a very, very different prospect. Someone gave me a funny look. I was like, that's not right.
Have a slightly different audience, you know.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I do feel a little bit like it is the blind leading the blind here, Caroline, because while all my friends were watching football and playing football in the field, I had the curtains drawn watching science fiction films as a child. So I am not the biggest football fan in the world. But I know there's a concern that perhaps, you know, attendance at these games may reduce as a result of them being televised. Now, having been to my very first football match only last year at Selhurst Park, my friend's a Crystal Palace fan, he took me down. I don't think that's going to be the case because he goes to every Crystal Palace game live, and I don't think there's any way of ever recreating that experience of watching a game live.
That's very much unique experience for Crystal Palace.
Right.
But also, don't you think that the act of, I mean, as we've seen with all things that get a lot of telly love, with that comes personalities, with that comes merchandising, with that comes attendance. I mean, it is a virtuous circle if they get it right.
I think you're right. And I think of all the broadcasters that could be doing this, I think Sky is the right home for this. I do think Sky are amazing when it comes, even as someone who isn't a huge football fan, I can watch and enjoy Sky's coverage because it is done so well. And when I was at Sky and we had Sky Cinema, which was three desks, and there was about 5,000 desks for the Sky Sports department, so it doesn't surprise me that they have paid close to $1 billion for these rights.
Yeah, and they're going to be putting so a lot of these matches are going to go on Sky Sports Plus. Got to add a plus to your service, very important. And they'll have the opportunity and capability to show up to 100 live events at once, all at no extra cost to subscribers. I mean, that's the things they're fighting against Disney and Netflix. And when you look at your subscriptions each month, you think, what am I paying for? They obviously clearly think the investment's worth it for this amount of content.
Absolutely. When I was at Sky again, Sky Sports, to put it bluntly, really supported Sky Cinema. I mean, that's kind of reductive, but it really is the golden goose, and it's unsurprising that they've paid the money they have. I think up 50% on the last deal they struck.
I mean, Caroline, Sky's in an interesting position. They were sort of the ultimate aggregator. They're the ones that got all the rights over the years. And now the bits of those rights are disappearing to different places. Indeed, you know, Disney announced this week that they've done a deal with Warner Brothers Discovery to bring a bundle of Disney Plus, HBO Max, and Hulu together for the US market. I mean, Sky's in an interesting position to try and stay at the top.
Yes. I think Sky has always been a disruptor because it's been that commercial ballast, hasn't it? It's always had the deeper pockets. It's always had that willingness to spend more. It's the BBC and ITV, but not quite as significantly, have had to sort of duck and dive and to investigate other sports and how they move their packages around for linear broadcasters, whereas Sky can just basically throw money at the situation. And what, as you've said, with those bundle packages and the fact that other people are now gathering together, Sky are having to sort of balance that traditional commercial, very, very successful offering with something a little bit more high end sometimes. So the great news, again, for the viewer is that as a result, you get Sky Atlantic, you get a great wealth of documentaries. I think it's leveled the playing field as speaking as a viewer.
And they're not as, they don't have that strong position as they used to, do they, Alex? I mean, it's kind of, they've got to work for it. They've got to work for viewers' attention.
Well, absolutely. I mean, you know, just to speak to my position at Sky, which was very much in the world of movies and cinema, Sky used to have a very privileged relationship with all the studios because there were no streamers. And so a studio had built a relationship with Sky, and Sky Cinema was the first place for films to be broadcast in the UK post their theatrical release. Now, obviously, every studio almost has their own streaming service now. And so obviously all their movies are going on their own streaming service. And so therefore Sky has had to adapt and find other avenues, which isn't the latest movies first, to get viewers.
Well, some other people that are adapting, that always adapt, is Google, and their power has been felt again by newsrooms in the UK as SEO tool Sistrix, big fans, reports big drops for publishers after Google sort of changed its algorithm in March. Caroline, Google's said they've done this to kind of clean up their search results, to pull out a load of AI and sort of random websites that are just churning out content. But some news publishers have been hit. What's happened?
Yes, so this is, they're calling it one of the biggest core updates yet. Now, we know Google never does anything for the charity aspect of things. I mean, to say it's cleaning up the low quality, I think that this is very much a reading the room, and that people are not using search tools the way they used to. Obviously, it's the publishers who are having to adapt. I think it attests to the strength of social media. People, particularly the younger generations, are, this has been well documented over the last 2 years, nothing new saying here. They get their news every other way. They get their news passively. It comes to them via their influencers and their social media, the big hitters on TikTok, on even, you know, on YouTube. I speak to people and they don't watch the news at all. They haven't read a newspaper for over a decade. So I think the fact that iNews have got one of the big winners in this latest chart, they must be doing something singular, because they're pretty much the only one that is going against the trend, which is a huge fall.
I mean, I was looking down the list of some of the people that haven't had a good time, and it's a real mixed bag, and you can't draw too much from it. But you see kind of some things like HelloMagazine.com's in there, and Metro, and a lot of new, and some of the Reach titles, like a lot of news publishers have leaned into what's trending at the moment and have quickly turned out some churn out content. And it's a lot of that stuff that's been hit. That's those publishers trying to get listed on Google, and now Google are trying to go, no, we don't want any of that stuff here.
Well, I mean, well, if we are going to believe, which Caroline doesn't, and I don't either, but let's believe they are being completely altruistic here, and they just want us all to have a better experience. It says, according to Google, that what they've done is remove all these SEO explainer articles, which are clickbait, which are, you know, which are massively searched.
But Alex Zane, what is your net worth?
Yeah, it's in my search history. And so I think it's, I think on that front, great. I think, you know, because those articles are awful and they do pop up and you're like, I don't need to know a breakdown of like, who is Logan Roy in Succession? It's like you know these things. It's like, where can I watch X? It's amazing what comes up. So the idea of bumping those out and losing the visibility on those is great. I think, you know, we're talking about, you mentioned like the Reach publications that have been here. I think that the sad thing is that the visibility that Google provides much smaller companies, they've really been hit by this, to the point that without the visibility on Google, they have gone bust. More than one company has folded as a result of Google making this core update.
And also, I was in America earlier this year, and when you do searches, they now have AI answers that appear on top of the search terms that they have probably trained on most of the people that are below them in those search terms. There's some of this you look at and go, are they just kind of clearing the way for them to answer the questions and not send this traffic to people anymore?
Well, I mean, already, I mean, quite often, a lot of people have lost traffic because Google implemented a situation where they would answer your question. So you'd ask a question, and rather than, I think this is what you're talking about, the answer would appear on your Google search page, so you had no need to click on any any of the websites that were offering the answer.
I mean, Caroline, for news publishers, they're always pretty mean about Google, but they also want their traffic. Should they just be trying to build their own digital brands rather than hope that they'll get loads of traffic from social media and search to give them the page views they need to sell advertising on it?
I have always thought, ever since the internet was born, ever since 20 years ago now, living in Australia, and Rupert Murdoch discovered the internet and decreed that there was to be a website to go with his tabloid newspaper in Melbourne, I have always said you need to build the brand and people will come. And I guess some of the success stories that we know about. So I'm surprised to see New York Times so low down on that list, because I would have said it was a case study of how to do it well. But something's obviously gone a bit wrong there. Perhaps they have been too reliant on search terms. But if you look at something like The Times in this country, The Telegraph, and Financial Times have always done well, they're not going to be bothered, because they make their money through people who pay their subs and visit those sites every day as regular readers, and they will read what The Times, The Telegraph, The Financial Times have to tell them. And I think that that's the way forward, and it's kind of as it should be. I have never been a fan of these journalists from, I guess they've started to die out, haven't they? Disappeared off the foothills, the likes of the BuzzFeeds and the Yahoo News and the Microsoft aggregators and Huffington Post. I mean, to be clicking on something that the Sun original journalist has gone out and found and to rewrite it and then to add 10 explainers. I've worked in those places, and they are cynical, number crunching operations, and they've been calling themselves journalists for far too long. And frankly, perhaps this is the wake up call that both subscribers and publishers need to say, we need to come up with something original, innovative, and actually something to offer our reader rather than just chasing the money.
Well, whilst I rewrite some articles for the second part of the show, we'll be back with info about the biggest night in radio, Eurovision, and of course the media quiz, all after this.
Hi, I'm Matt Kelly, the founder of The New European Newspaper.
And I'm Matt D'Ancona, I'm an editor-at-large at The New European.
This week on our podcast, The Two Matts, we get really stuck into, and in fact we sort of disagree quite a bit,
about Israel and Gaza.
We
have a proper disagreement, a proper ding-dong, but I think that's good, because I think that issues like this are best addressed with discussion.
Respectful dialogue.
Respectful dialogue, and I think we covered a lot of ground, and I'm glad we did.
I enjoyed it.
I really enjoyed it.
I found it challenging, but really cathartic as well.
But that's what we want.
So it's a tough listen. We're still not totally in agreement, and find out why. Go to The Two Matts in your podcast app of choice.
Enjoy.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences, whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets. Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Welcome back. Alex and Caroline are here for some more news in brief. Over to the ARIAs. This is the Radio Academy's awards bash, where the BBC Asian Network came away with Station of the Year. Oh, FYI, my own fun kids, we got a bronze for that category too.
Congratulations.
That's okay. I'm here just fishing for those compliments. Alex, what did you see from that winner's list?
If I can take a moment to just shout out a friend, yeah. A friend of mine won gold for Tim's Listening Party on Absolute Radio. Tim Burgess, the frontman of the Charlatans, his show, which began life as a podcast.
Yes, a podcast to radio show.
And evolved to radio. So a big congratulations to Ian Lamara. Well done.
I think it was the first show that won, a first award that won. I thought it was an interesting list, and I was sitting there in the audience waiting for mine to come up. And... lots of BBC local radio success, and actually a lot of local radio success more generally, a lot of BBC success. There's sort of a lot of discussion. We've had it on the show about the kind of decline in local radio. We see a lot of network commercial radio, BBC local radio under threat. But it does show that when they've got a great story, they can do a great job with it.
I mean, I don't know whether I should say this, but why not? Let's pull back the curtain. This is the media podcast, after all. So I was once on the judging panel, back before they were the ARIAs and they were the Sony Radio Awards. I was on the judging panel for Newcomer of the Year, which is any radio DJ on any network who's only been going for, I can't remember, X amount of time. And what you got was a mix of local radio DJs who you'd not heard of, and then some bigger names. In the year that I was doing it, Jarvis Cocker was one of the names. And we were working out the shortlist. I posited the argument that you simply cannot have Jarvis Cocker and an unknown local radio DJ on the same list if this is going to a public vote, because ultimately the public are going to go, well, I know who that is. Mm. That's Jarvis Cocker. I'm going to vote for that. And I was never asked back to the judging panel. It was like I'd taken a needle and started to pick at the thread of this system that had been in place for ages. But I think it's great, because to go back to what you were saying, I think it's absolutely fantastic. What a difference it can make to a local radio DJ's career that perhaps, in my example, someone like Jarvis Cocker simply does not need.
It was always interesting. You want the awards to have a bit of everything. You want a bit of star power, a bit of great local stories. We sort of had someone on stage who was like a listener who was involved in a show, and that was really good too. Caroline, what did you see on the list that caught your attention?
I just kept seeing the name Rob Borrow from BBC Radio Leeds. I mean, clearly he is the man on the rise. He won a podcast, he won some innovation, he got a silver as a presenter. Who is that man?
And, well, I will tell you. And so he was a professional sportsman who has motor neurone disease. Came on stage in a wheelchair, used a sort of cartwheel to play his acceptance speech. They've created a show that uses a kind of AI sampled version of his voice that they use to interview people. And so, yeah, very, very different. And a BBC local, he's on a BBC local radio station. I think it's Leeds. And
let's go with Leeds. I'm from Leeds. Let's say it's Leeds.
But it's a good creative execution. And that's the other thing, isn't it? Like, the great thing about radio and audio is you don't need hundreds of cameras and superstars. You can create great emotional, impactful media with relatively few people.
Well, we were on with you a few weeks ago, weren't we, for the Broadcast Press Guild Awards. And what we've always tried to do on those committees is for the Innovation Awards, certainly, is when the medium meets the message and somehow they support and boost each other. And I think that, as you say, this is proof of that as well. Other names to pop out at me, you've mentioned the fact that local radio just seems to be the sort of the dying art, but is a lifeline for so many people. But also we should mention National Prison Radio. It did very well. Got to mention, when you think that's a niche offering that mercifully perhaps most of us don't get to hear, it's obviously doing something very effective, and no doubt there will be human stories that come out of that which one day we will hear about, I'm sure.
It was lovely to see them do so well. I feel that radio has sent so many people into prison. It's nice that quality radio is coming out of prison. One of the shows that won is basically a request show that has lots of kind of voice notes in it. And again, like in prisons, the way that they do media in prisons changes what they have access to. COVID changed that quite a lot as well. And so a sort of a show which you can been very difficult to have done in the past in prison, you can now do. And I was looking up National Prison Radio after they won their awards. Very high proportion of the people that can listen do listen. And again, it's just back to if you've got a reason to have a connection with an audience and you're making something particularly for them, then you'll enjoy getting listeners from it.
I do think, I mean, you know, just to champion the medium once more, I do think of all the mediums, there's an intimacy to radio between listener and broadcaster that exists in no other medium.
Right, finally before the quiz, let's talk Eurovision. Caroline, likely a more muted affair than last year, obviously because it's not in the UK, but also...
last year, what? Graham Norton is one of the most experienced broadcasters in the country, and I've never seen him look flustered. And, you know, 10,000 Liverpudlians screaming behind him finally broke Norton.
Well, it's sort of back to the home of Eurovision this year, isn't it? Going to Sweden. But obviously conflict in Gaza, issues Israeli contestants as well. Caroline, that's going to affect all the coverage, isn't it? All the events.
Yes, I mean, it's 50 years since Apple won. So the one of the great, hopefully musical headlines will be, I'm crossing everything, that if ever the four of them feel minded to reunite, it will be on Saturday night in Malmo to give everybody what they need. I mean, Bjorn, I'm sure, needs no encouraging. Benny, not far behind him. It's the ladies that have always been a little bit harder to persuade. They've kind of poked their heads out. I think they made an appearance at the first night of ABBA Voyage, but they didn't have to do any singing. So that could be a lovely nostalgic hook. But everything else is shrouded with this political context. I mean, even our dear Ollie Alexander has found himself under duress because he signed a petition demanding the end of the activity in Gaza, and Queers for Palestine jumped on that and said, well, if he thinks that that's the case, he should be boycotting the competition as long as Israel are involved. Of course, the powers that be, the EBU, have said it's a different situation from banning Russia, because everything that Israel has done, it continues to be a sanctified state that so far, I mean, if statesmen around the world can't sort this out at their summits and their UN councils, we can't really expect the likes of Ollie Alexander to sort of just sort it all out on his day off from rehearsals. But you can see it has had its effect on him. And I think he's been quite fragile this week. And I'm hoping that by Saturday, that perhaps just we will all be in the arena with them in spirit, and we'll be reminded that this is a bunch of musicians who are, the theme is united by music, and never have they needed it so much.
Alex, it's going to be difficult to keep that show on the road for the whole duration.
Yeah, it's, I mean, to speak on the music itself, though, I mean, some phenomenal entries this year. I don't know whether you've watched them, but I mean, we're in for a real treat. There's some incredible entries, not least of all Windows 95, man. Just brilliant.
Do you think Ollie's got a good chance?
No. I was down for a moment there, I was going to dress it up. No, it's, do you know what? It's not a bad song. Mm. It's fine. But compared to some of the others, the other entries, I'm thinking, I don't know, Slovenia is great. Switzerland. Oh, Switzerland. There's a Nemo's song. The Swiss entry, The Code, is just, I mean, never have I ever heard a song which involves rap and falsetto operatics within 3 seconds of each other. It's an incredible piece of music.
Caroline, anybody you think we should be looking out for?
Well, I hope Ukraine do well, because they do. I spoke to the two ladies that are competing for Ukraine this week, and I get the sense that they think that they've become yesterday's war, that they said boycotting is not an option for them because they are desperate to raise funds. If they do well, that they're going to do the same as Kalush Orchestra 2 years ago, and any money they make will go straight into the war effort. But they were somewhere like 10th in the bookies chart. Following a stomping first semi-final performance, they're now going up that bookies chart. So I wish them well on Saturday for sure.
Well, Saturday's going to be a good night for BBC One. Double Doctor Who, then Eurovision. Mm. I'm sure Charlotte Moore's rubbing her hands with glee at the hope of super ratings.
Yeah, and then Sunday, the BAFTAs.
And then, of course,
No small event either.
Just enough time for the media quiz. This week, we're playing Does It Float? I feel that the producer, Matt Hill, is just making me do more and more difficult things with the quiz. Luckily, there aren't any props. I'm going to give you a media property that's been in the news in the past week. You've just got to tell me if the talent and or product is about to set sail on the high seas of success or sink without a trace. So buzz in with your names if you know the answer. So Caroline, you will say...
Caroline.
And Alex, you will say...
Alex.
Let's play Does It Float? Buzz in if you think you know. Question number one, Mo Gilligan.
Alex. Yes, he...
Sink or float?
This is... He's floating. He is floating, right?
He is floating. Why is he floating?
He's floating because he has just signed a deal to make a new podcast with Global, an interview show. I forget the name.
It is called Beginning, Middle and End.
Right.
I mean, he's a popular guy, does a great job. Has he ever really found, like, the right vehicle?
I think three BAFTAs would suggest that he probably has. Yeah, I mean, I'm interested, as someone who, like, you know, my bread and butter is podcast interviews. Mm. I'll be interested to see what angle it takes. Beginning, middle and end. I when I read the title, I was like, okay, is that interviewing filmmakers? Because otherwise, you know, I've got competition. I'm intrigued to know what... I don't think they've said what it is other than it's an interview show. So, you're no doubt aware, I mean, the podcast market is busy.
Super competitive.
It's a super competitive place. And to cut through, you have to be offering something that people can't get anywhere else other than being a very charming media personality, which he is.
Okay, 1 point to you. Question number two. Sky continuity announcers.
Caroline.
Floating or sinking?
Apparently sinking, because Sky are removing their continuity announcers from 6 of their channels. They're saying that they will be tailoring the offering to any programmes that are particularly big in the audiences with linear broadcasts, but they don't need to keep those people sitting in those booths for hour after hour doing, speaking to only a few people when lots of people are now watching TV on demand and they don't need those announcers anymore.
Yeah, the stations that are being hit, Sky Max, Sky Cinema, Sky Documentary, Sky Nature, Sky Comedy and Sky Sci-Fi. Mm. It's tough. You're absolutely right. More people watching on streamers, watching individual episodes. But continuity is the brand of a channel. Are they missing a trick by not leaning into it?
It's not only the brand of a channel, it's a quintessentially British thing. Mm. I think there's only us and Ireland in the whole world that have continuity announcers, and you remember them. I mean, granted, people aren't watching linear TV as much, but for some people, not everyone, but I'm sure it feels like company, knowing that someone is in that booth and talking to you live as you're sitting at home, perhaps on your own, watching that show. I'm sure it does feel like a connection to the outside world.
I was talking to one of the bosses at BBC Wales, where they have their own continuity for BBC One Wales. And he was saying it's a great resource for them to cross-promote or to add something in at the last minute and reflect the day. Caroline, are we just harping on like, oh, it was lovely in the old days and we should just move with the time?
Yes, they're all wearing dinner jackets and speaking into Ovaltine microphones. I do remember during lockdown, we had the Strictly Come Dancing final, and it was a friend of mine, Duncan Newmarch, on that day, and he spoke to the nation and he said, wherever you are, however alone you are, we're all in this together. And it was very moving, and people were quick to write about it on social media, and he channeled something that day. And I'm not saying that every single day needs that level of intimacy, of engagement, but it has something unique and valuable. And I just think, I hope that they're not going to throw out the baby with the bathwater with all of this.
Indeed. So a point apiece. Final question. Question number three. GB News owner Paul Marshall Silver. Well, I will tell you, if you're not keeping tracks on what GB News' Paul Marshall is up to.
We just want to draw.
Well,
we're lovers, not fighters.
he is very much sunk. So if you haven't heard this story, it's a brilliant story. He'd invested in a secret operation to...
This is already gold. Go on.
To go down to a World War II shipwreck where there was some loot down there and basically... get the loot and keep the money. It turned out to be £34 million of silver in this shipwreck, which him and his team, obviously not him, his team recovered. Mm. But unfortunately, the South African Mint said it was theirs from this ship that had crashed in the 40s. And they won. So he didn't get to keep his silver loot.
Wow.
I almost feel sorry for him. I wouldn't say I would normally feel sorry for GB News' Paul Marshall, but I do almost feel
sorry.
Not what
I expected that story to be.
So very much sunk for Paul Marshall.
Literally.
Yes. So congratulations. You draw the quiz. You've sort of cheated by drawing, but that's okay. As a reward, I've got a map to some great booty somewhere. You can share that between you.
Thank you.
No worries. Thank you to both my guests, Alex Zane and Caroline Frost. Caroline, where can people keep up with what you're up to?
I am at Frost Reporter on Twitter, and you can read my weekly column in the Radio Times magazine.
And Alex, how can people hear your dulcet tones at the moment?
You can find me on Instagram at Alex Zane, and you can listen to Countdown to the BAFTAs, and you've got to listen to it quick because we finish counting down on Sunday when the BAFTAs actually take place. So you've got about 48 hours to listen to all the episodes as we count down to the BAFTAs, available on all podcast platforms.
Yes, wherever you're listening to this one. Thank you both.
Thank you, Matt.
Thank you.
And that's it for today from the London Podcast Studios. Remember, this is the place where you can get 25% off your first booking. Just go to their website, thelondonpodcaststudios.com. Use the code MEDIAPOD and get your 25% off. That's thelondonpodcaststudios.com. Use the code MEDIAPOD. And if you're new to the show, remember to hit follow so you get all new episodes in your podcast app of choice. My name's Matt Deegan. The producer was Matt Hill, supported by Ollie Peart. It was a Rethink Audio production.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences. Whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Hey, welcome to the Next Wave podcast. Consider us your chief AI officer in your business. My name is Matt Wolf. I have the number one YouTube channel in the AI space. I also run futuretools.com, and I'm joined by my co-host, Nathan Lands, founder of lore.com. We want to bring you the latest AI news and trends, show you how you can use AI in your business and personal life, and help make it super easy for you to understand and execute. We're going to equip you with the knowledge to thrive in this upcoming wave of change.
So, retrospectors, what historical events are we ticking off on this week's run of Today in History?
Well, on Monday, it's the anniversary of the table knife being invented.
On Tuesday, we explain how the tradition of the two-minute silence originated in Cape Town.
On Wednesday, we recall the day King George III proved he was assassin-proof.
On Thursday, let's all eat cake. It's Marie Antoinette's wedding.
And on Friday, we discover how Buffalo Bill helped invent the Wild West.
We discuss this and more on Today in History with the Retrospectors. 10 minutes each weekday, wherever you get your podcasts.